thank you, Louise, for the prayer. And I think we, with our spiritual side and our, well, I don't guess we have a spiritual side. It's all spiritual and it's all material. I think it just makes us realize how deep and important it is in this moment to be trying to make radical change, and how Native people have been oppressed and have been giving gifts to this system. All of their gifts have been plundered, and this is going on throughout the world now, everywhere. And so those of us who benefit from this really need to make the changes from within. So I want to propose that the gift economy, which indigenous people have, is really the basis of a better world. And we need to find that gift economy also in ourselves as women, and as men too, in ways that we haven't been looking at it before. I think gift giving and exchange are bound up with each other, and it's very difficult to untangle them from each other. This is because this intertwining has been taking place for many years. Our society is now based on exchange, and the logic of exchange is validated everywhere, every time we sell or buy. This logic is a very strong magnetic template that influences everything we think and the way we behave, making us more self-interested and more attached to reflections and judgments about ourselves and others than we would be otherwise. Other societies have been based on gift giving without this strong underlying logic of exchange. In a context where the exchange logic is lacking, or at least not dominant, human interactions can take on an entirely different character, so that even when giving is reciprocated, it is not immediately placed in a framework of exchange with all the consequences that framework entails, but it remains within a gift paradigm. Exchange comes from gift giving. It is a gift made contingent upon an equivalent return gift. One satisfies the other's need only in order to receive the satisfaction of her or his own. Exchange for money introduces an object which is taken as a general standard or norm of value. Marx called it the general equivalent, altering the gift process still further. And it alters it because money has no material use, and it can only be given to somebody else in place of a commodity. However, the principle of exchange is actually the principle of not giving, because the gift is canceled by the return gift, and the intention of satisfying the other's need is canceled, or at least deeply altered, by the intention of satisfying one's own need. Using money as the means of exchange and standard of value creates a need for money, which is an abstract and general need, unlike the needs that are satisfied through direct gift giving. Money, together with the process of exchange, influences our thinking, making us concerned with equations, measurement, judgments of value, hierarchical categorizations, and quantifications of punishment and reprisal. Exchange is ego-oriented. It influences us to give value to ourselves and to money, while in context based on gift-giving, value is transferred to the other person by implication because we satisfy her or his needs. In fact, gift-giving and exchange are two opposing logics, and one is made from the other. Unfortunately, the second logic becomes parasitic upon the first, both because of the ego orientation it fosters and because exchange appears to the gift paradigm as its other, to which the gift givers then give. The interactions between these two logics play out at many different levels, individually and socially. They are present in the family and in class, race, and international relations. To complicate matters more, they are also invested with our constructions of gender, especially in European American culture. In fact, I think that if we broaden our use of the term economic to mean the way we satisfy needs, we can say that the way we construct our genders is economic, and the economy as we know it derives from the ways we construct our genders. Some years ago, Marilyn Waring revealed that women's free housework would add some 40% to the GNP in the U.S. if it were counted in monetary terms, and more in some other countries. This was taken by the feminist movement as evidence that women should be paid for their free labor. I am taking a different direction by saying that it shows that the definition of economic should be widened to include free labor because it is one of the ways we satisfy needs. In fact, if we say that the economy is the way we satisfy needs, we can see there are at least two kinds of economies, of which one is free giving and the other is exchange. In fact, I believe gift giving is the basic way to satisfy needs, the basic economy, and exchange is an unnecessary and artificial variation where the gift is canceled. The gift economy is widespread at many levels, and it has a number of psychological and logical implications that are different from the implications of exchange. However, the logic of exchange is self-reflecting and self-reinforcing, and it displaces attention away from gift giving onto itself. It actually hides gift giving and devalues it, while at the same time attracting and co-opting its gifts. These two modes of distribution follow the way we have been constructing our gender roles and expectations. The modes of distribution are now as artificial and as complementary as are our heterosexual stereotypes. Women as mothers have been able to interact with their children according to the gift logic because young children cannot give them back an equivalent of what they receive. Thus, women have a period in their lives when they practice the gift logic very intensely if they are mothers. Boys are socialized into a gender identity opposite to that of their mothers. Before they learn language, they identify with the mother, but then they find they are in a binary opposite category, so they begin to see gift giving as something they must not do. Since gift giving is in fact very pervasive and they are dependent on it and on their mother's nurturing, there is little else for them to seize upon as a content for their gender. They have to develop an identity based on not giving, which is then privileged over the identity based on giving, often even by the mothers themselves. This process, which I call masculation, is a construction based on a misunderstanding, not on a necessary process. And it is projected into society at large, into the institutions of society, into the market itself. In fact, exchange, which cancels the gift through an equivalent return, and the market based on exchange, create an area of not giving, where those who are falsely socialized not to nurture can find a place. The market uses them as its agents and masculation as the motivation of its processes. I believe that we need to refocus and see that gift giving, not exchange, is the common thread of our humanity. Gift giving seems like a simple process, but it carries with it many possibilities of elaboration. Because we are always looking through the glasses of exchange, we do not recognize unilateral gift giving as the important interpretative key that it is. If gift giving is the human baseline, developing an identity that is its opposite is a very difficult, contradictory endeavor. Not only is it almost impossible, but even trying to achieve it brings about a number of paradoxes that have strange and awkward resolutions. Years ago, Gregory Bateson talked about the fact that living with paradoxes is schizophrenogenic. That is, it drives people crazy. Trying to be not giving when gift giving is the principle of existence is a paradox that is very hard to resolve. One of its expressions is that because humans must live in community, They have to satisfy each other's needs to some extent, even if they are forbidden by their gender not to. Those who are not supposed to give have to develop a way of giving without giving, and that is what the logic of exchange provides. In the logic of exchange, which equates one good with another or with money, property can be given without losing it, since its value remains the same. Because gift giving is oriented towards the other, this unusual construction of not giving becomes the other of the gift and the gift givers give to it. This happens, for example, when mothers give less to their daughters, who are like themselves, and more to their sons, who they are socializing to be male and not to give. Another partial resolution of this paradox is that because gift giving establishes relations, the not givers still have to do it in many ways. And one of these is hitting, which touches the other person not to nurture but to hurt, and establishes relations of dominance rather than mutuality. Still another partial resolution is that the not givers actually do give, but they hide and discredit gift giving, or they convince themselves that they receive the gifts because they deserve them, because of what they have already given or because they are in a superior category. This concealment and denigration extends to the giving others do towards them, with the result that the dependencies on the gifts of others are not acknowledged. Housework and other free giving is not valued, and the logic of exchange is overvalued. The masculated identity and its projection into society become the norm, but they are also constructed in a peculiar way using norms. Before I go on, I want to mention an idea I've been working on for a long time. And you can read about it in the stuff I've written also. There's a current of cognitive psychology that talks about the way we form concepts or categories by using prototypes. That is, using a best example or an exemplar to represent or illustrate a category. For example, the prototype for the mid-level category bird would be the robin. But I believe we have to develop categories that include ourselves and that we all begin with the mother as the exemplar of our category of human being. When boys find they are in an opposite gender, they have to switch prototypes to the father. The father takes over or substitutes for the mother as the model of what the human being is. I think that the prototype position becomes identified with the big man or the one at the top, and that males are always trying to achieve it. The substitution of one model for the other is invested with the transformation of giving into hitting and becomes dominance and power over. Masculated males compete with each other to become the one at the top, the male exemplar. However, this is paradoxical also because logically, there is only one at the top. In order to resolve this paradox, multiple hierarchies are established in different areas of life in allowing many different one-to-many top-down roles. In this way, a categorization process that would have been neutral and benign is incarnated into a gender stereotype with an agenda of domination. Since it is an incarnation of the way we think, it can also be projected into our social institutions. In the market also, money has the prototype position with regard to commodities. It is the exemplar of exchange value. All the other goods and services are compared to it. It categorizes them and takes their place. In doing this, it categorizes use values as exchange values, turning gifts into not gifts. These partial resolutions of the paradoxes coming from the coexistence of the two modes of distribution, giving and not giving, feed the construction of heterosexuality as we know it in Euro-America. Feminine gift givers give more to supposedly superior masculated men, while macho independence, violence, and domination are used to establish control in families, among competitors, and within and among nations. The female gender has adapted to its artificial opposite, the masculated gender, nurturing it. Both are therefore artificial, in that the female adaptation to an artificial construction is itself artificial. I call it feminization. If we socialized males differently, women would not have to adapt, and so would be different. But both males and females could be gift-giving. However, we would also need to undo the institutions based on genders constructed in this way to allow all of us to arrive at our true humanity. In fact, it's the institutions that rebroadcast to us all of these paradoxes and this gender construction. Because gender assignments depend not on biology, but on the social readings of our biological differences, women can also be not givers and violent, while men can be nurturing. But the artificial gender norms have been projected into society and taught in homes and schools for centuries. Women in the West have been liberated from some of the defects of their artificial feminization by their participation in the not-giving market. But recognition of the importance of the gift-giving, which was embedded in the feminization, has been eliminated as well. At the same time, the market and masculation, capitalism and patriarchy, have developed into a dominant paradigm and a paradigm of dominance. And they have become the basic, though unacknowledged, underlying pattern or metaphor for all our thinking. Heterosexual gender ideals are still very strong and have a huge resonance among the population, in spite of the values of equality promoted by the market. For example, look at the popularity of Arnold Schwarzenegger. In a way, feminism has separated masculation from the market. Men who for a while were able to derive their sense of masculinity from their work in the market, while women were relegated to the home, had to give up this privilege when women again became part of the salaried workforce. Some men have thus found their masculated roles outside their individual lives, identifying with a nation, religion, or group into which the masculated behavior has been projected. In fact, the roles have been projected hemispherically, and the masculated global North is trying to force the South into feminized positions. Because it is based on categorization, the market itself seems to produce values of equality, fairness, measurement, similarity, and difference, more and less. It concentrates on objects as neuter, not gifts, and appears to be ungendered. These values seem to be less masculated than the male gender role itself, while at the same time the market still discredits, hides, and exploits gift-giving. In fact, the parasitic side of the market can be seen when we name the gifts it takes to make profit. Surplus value, the part of the value of the labor that remains unpaid, is a gift of the worker to the capitalist, even if it's a forced gift. It's still free to the capitalist. The gifts of nature, of free or low-cost resources, the gifts of women's free labor in the home, the gifts of the South to the North, the gifts of the people of the future that are taken away in the present by environmental degradation, all of these and many others constitute the unseen nurturing that society and nature give to the market. The projection of masculation into the market displaces the role of male norm or prototype from human beings to money, a prototype which people can actually own. Money then provides power over others, and the market can be easily invested with the most motivations of masculation, which we call ambition, greed, and domination. This is the social construction I am calling patriarchal capitalism. I believe that the political right wing is mostly an expression of patriarchal capitalism, maintaining the masculated and feminized heterosexual gender stereotypes. Most political progressives are now still part of patriarchy and capitalism, but are more directly based on the market values of equality and fairness than the right is. Neither side of this opposition is based on gift-giving, which remains a seemingly impossible paradigm available only to some individuals in their private lives or belonging to indigenous or so-called pre-capitalist societies. Yet in the U.S., both the political parties are leading us towards devastation. We have to shift our thinking to reconsider the gift paradigm by looking at what is going around us. Even in the recent elections, we can see evidence of the patterns that are being set up. If heterosexuality as we know it is the coexistence of two economies, and if these economies are based on heterosexuality as we construct it, we could presumably change the one by changing the other. That is perhaps why homosexuality and transgender seem so threatening to the economic right wing. Unfortunately, the LGBT movement has more to do with challenging biology as the basis for gender identity and less to do with challenging the economic basis of gender seen in terms of giving and not giving or exchange. While it is very important to realize that gender roles are social assignments and not biologically fixed, and this can be achieved by the changing of masculated and feminized roles, it is even more important to challenge the artificial gender constructions themselves. Since the masculated gender is artificial, it is insecure and always in doubt, an agenda to achieve. That makes it more dangerous. The feminized gender nurtures it and gives it self-confidence. On the other hand, this means that the gender identity is not all there is in a male or a female human being. Masculation does not exhaust a man's or a woman's personhood because gift giving is necessary and everyone does it even if they don't think they are doing it. Feminization does not exhaust a man's or a woman's personhood because it is only the complement of masculation. If gift giving can be restored to the disciplines and areas of life where it has been taken away, for example, to the study of language, philosophy, art, and even of biology, rather than seeing gift giving only in mothering or saintly behavior or in so-called pre-capitalist cultures, we can all find our gift-based humanity. Then these power-driven schizophrenic men can find something upon which to build their selfhood that is not their masculated masculinity and the subservience of their wives, but is their gift-giving humanity. Recognizing that, they will find it easier to give up their masculation. At the same time, women will no longer adapt as their other half, feminized gift-givers in a masculated, ungiving context. It is the context that makes things what they are. The context of exchange alters gift-giving enormously. The context of masculated maleness alters gift-giving feminine, the gift-giving feminine enormously, painting it into the corner of mothering. The market, as it has arisen in Europe and the U.S., has combined with the masculated maleness agenda to create patriarchal capitalism, where the values of competition, accumulation, large size, and domination drive the ways we satisfy needs and what needs and whose needs we satisfy. In contexts based on gift-giving, reciprocal giving, turn-taking, even exchange are assimilated to the gift model, while in contexts based on exchange, gift-giving is seen as manipulative, a hidden or failed exchange, or even impossible. We can find out who we can be beyond these alterations by creating a paradigm shift in order to move forward towards a practical gift economy in a way that will not cause harm, but will satisfy the needs of all. If we can reframe interactions in terms of gift giving and identify the negative aspects of exchange, we can begin to discover a context in which transitive interactions of satisfying another's needs are visible and valued. For example, communication means giving gifts together in Latin, because muni is gifts in Latin. And community is also based on gift circulation. We establish human relations of understanding, mutuality, and trust when we give to satisfy needs. Language is a collection of verbal gifts that can be put together in various ways to satisfy the communicative needs of others. When we tell the truth, we are satisfying the listener's need to know. and we can call this a gift. When we tell a lie, we are satisfying a communicative need, but this is our own need, and we are satisfying our need to deceive. Thus, lying has a logic that is similar to the ego-oriented logic of exchange. If our eyes are open to seeing the gift where it exists already, it is easier to understand how various kinds of interactions that we thought were normal, just the way things are actually part of the exchange paradigm. For example, retaliation, vengeance, punishment, making the criminal pay is consonant with the exchange paradigm, while forgiving and seeking to satisfy the needs at the source of the problem are consonant with the gift paradigm. In creating the paradigm shift, it is important to enhance images of free women and other non-masculated gift givers, diminishing the images of male power, phallic supremacy, and world dominion. We need to create and acknowledge gift spaces wherever they occur and recognize the responsibility of gift giving in making community work. The market seems neuter and neutral, but once we project the mother instead of the dominant male, even perception becomes a gift to which we can respond with knowledge and gratitude. We need to affirm the importance of gift giving, not to be recognized for the gifts we give, but to move gift giving itself into the public consciousness, raising it to a level of awareness whereby it becomes normal, not exceptional. In that case, the paradox that gift givers become exchangers by being recognized for their gifts would no longer exist. When something is commonplace, there is no special recognition or reward for doing it. At the same time, we need to see how harmful the simple interaction of exchange is. It is only the fact of unseen gift giving that we do that allows us to survive in spite of the scarcity and mutual indifference created by the market. We need to develop a non-masculated culture outside the market, led by non-masculated women and men who will not try to take the position of the norm. So that is my prescription of our, let's say, delineation of what patriarchy is. And if we can grasp the reasons for patriarchy, we can dismantle it and create a society that's based on gift giving, which is our real human heritage. Thank you.